Welcome to How Fitting, the podcast for slow fashion designers and entrepreneurs about creating clothing and growing a business that fits your customer lifestyle and values. I'm your host, Allison Haynes. Do you want to get your designs to production without compromising your brand's fit, vision, or values? My pattern making services are tailored to help womenswear slow fashion brands do just that. You can learn more and book a free introduction call at howfittingpatterns.com to see if we'd be a good fit to work together. Now, on to the episode.
Today, I'm joined by Erin Kavanaugh of the Effortly Chic plus size brand C Rose Go. So welcome to the show, Erin.
Thank you, Allison. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. So C Rose Go is a very customer-focused brand, and even the name is about the customer, not about like you as the founders or you as the brand. And while many brands strive to know their customers and design for them, it's evident that you've really built your business on an ongoing conversation with your customer. So I'm curious, how do you start and keep those conversations going with the women in your target market?
Man, that is like everything we're about. And even I would say starts really with kind of my background and professionally how I kind of grew up in the industry is just being consumer centric. And it's what it's all about. If you're going to have a business, and when my co-founder and I started this brand, it had to be as a solution. It couldn't just be stuff to create more stuff. And we both come from the fashion industry. We've been in fashion retail for 20 plus years. I'll just put the plus sign after it. So to answer your question and to build a consumer-centric product and to really know the customer, I think you could probably course correct, but it should really start from the beginning of building the product, of course. And early in my career, I am from the West Coast, and to me, like Nordstrom was it. And when I was getting into fashion, I wanted to be at Nordstrom. And I feel like that really helped shape and set up my thinking, you know, coming from a customer service mindset and kind of like, you know, put yourself in their shoes. Like, what would you want? So when we were starting C Rose Go, you know, neither myself or my co-founder wear a plus size, and C Rose Go is size 10 to 28. And to kind of really get in that mindset, you know, the best and the first thing you should obviously do is talk to the customer, and you have to really pinpoint who is your target customer, because I don't know if everyone has heard the statistic, but over 68% of women in the US wear a plus size. And that doesn't mean, you know, two out of three women all want the same thing or wear the same thing or need the same price point. So to back up, you know, where Yi and I really were when we wanted to do this was in conversation with a colleague of ours. And that conversation kind of got us to thinking of a certain type of product. So we kind of saw this white space and we knew, okay, the target market is really kind of in this space of a style sensibility that doesn't exist, kind of where Yi and I would want to be, would be in this kind of anti-trend, timelessness, you know, foundational pieces that had a modernity to them, like a sense of you know, timelessness, but we're modern. And we're an approachable luxury price point. So there was a lot of fast fashion, there's some luxury, but we were kind of looking at that right in between premium price point. So knowing the segment that we were looking for, then we kind of were speaking to women, you know, and it, like, inevitably all these conversations I was having were leading to more conversations. You know, that's kind of like my merchant background was just to kind of talk to the customer. And, you know, I would talk to a colleague that then was like, you got to talk to my sister, or you need to talk to my college roommate. And this is, you know, before Zoom. So I'll say Skype, you know, there were a lot of Skype calls, you know, glasses of wine in the city. I was in New York City at the time. Coffee dates, you know, all of these conversations at the very beginning, before we even had anything else, was, you know, talking to women to understand what their life was like. And previously I was at Nike, and you're building very specific products for a very specific purpose, which was performance for an athlete that was very performance driven and solution driven. So taking that mindset and applying it to speaking to women about their life, I never was asking women, what's in your closet? What do you wish you had? It was more about what you do on Saturday. Who are your role models? What are you doing right now? And the first question I would ask would be, how would you describe yourself? So there'd be these really great conversations. And from there, I would go back and sit with my partner, and we would kind of pull out, you know, I'd have my notes, and we'd pull out, you know, anything that kind of struck us as like, she said this or she said that. And And after, you know, hundreds of these conversations and you're pulling out like all of these insights and we were putting them on post-its. And if you go to our website, you'll see, you know, a snapshot of post-its on a wall. We just kind of started formulating, you know, these buckets of what women were saying into pillars. And then that really shaped the brand. So sorry for the long answer, but it's so...
No, it's great. There's so many things that I want to ask more about.
Okay. Yeah, it's really like, it's so important to me. And if you can tell, it's, you know, something I'm very passionate about, being consumer centric and really finding out what a person's life is like. Even though I'm coming from, you know, an athletic or performance mindset from my career, you can apply that anywhere. And what we are take away from speaking with women who were plus size, that we are all so similar. We all want quality. We all want clothing that fits. And then there were like little things, you know, that she might say that, you know, very distinct, that like, hey, I'm hot a lot. I'm hot all the time. I want to layer, but I have to think about the weather and I'm hot. And, you know, with our background coming from performance wear, we knew there are solutions for this. So our takeaway was, okay, let's get a fabric that's comfortable, that is something that's, you know, lifestyle, but it's performance, that is cooling, it's wicking, it's anti-pilling to kind of help with, you know, whether it's friction between the legs or friction under arms. And we actually just received our patent on a fabric that we invented because of these conversations.
Congratulations on them.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a long process.
You know, I know.
We're like, no, you'll hear, you'll never get it. Oh, you'll never get it. You'll never do that. I had Mills tell me I'll never get it. I had VC, you know, tell us we'll never do it. So it is really rewarding. So thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So many, and I love your approach to this, because this is kind of how I approach like getting the fit right, you know, as a pattern maker working with the brands that I work with, is you have to start with who are we trying to fit? Like, what is their life, you know, what lifestyle, and, you know, not just the body, but that's a big part of it, is like understanding the customer, because you'll never get it to fit right if you don't know who you're designing and making this for.
Hey, or what's their end in mind? You know, what's their purpose? Yeah. What are they wearing it for?
Yeah. Why did they buy this in the first place? Or why would they want to buy this? Exactly. So what kind of sparked wanting to start the brand in the first place? Was like, were you still working at Nike at the time? And what sparked kind of the entrepreneur side to become a founder and start this whole brand and process?
I wonder for entrepreneurs if it's always kind of there, or if there, you know, there's a sudden spark of an idea. I'll say for myself, it was always kind of there. You know, even as a little girl, I love clothing. I love fashion. My dad was an optometrist and had his own practice. So I was always exposed to this sense of freedom of making your own schedule. You know, he would come home for lunch. He could pick us up from school. So that was just kind of present. And I always really wanted to do it. Then, you know, you get into the corporate track. I had a great, you know, corporate path. And then I just kind of got to the sense that it was too late for me. You know, I was the 401k person. I was the health insurance person. And, I thought, you know, okay, that's passed me by. But there was a particular colleague of mine that was a designer, and she left and she moved to Austin, and she started a fashion line and she opened a store. And every time she would come back to New York to visit, I would see her and I'd be like, nah, man, you're doing it. This is awesome. And she'd be like, I guess now I totally get it. Why she said that? Because you're like, yeah, I guess I'm doing the thing. But I just always thought it was so amazing. When we finally did, I had all these kind of, you know, hopes and desires and thinking that I would have liked to have done it, but it was too late for me. I have four children. I was like, I could not do that. So my colleague comes to me. I'm at Nike, and we've been there for 9 years. You know, you've got a great thing going with, like, you've set your boundaries, you have your teams. Loved it. We were in New York. It was really a wonderful time. And I remember her saying to me, like, we should do something together. So my co-founder was a global director of design, and I was the global director for women's merchandising. And we worked really well together. We challenged each other. It was always really a lot of fun. And we kind of just always would play around with, we should do something. We couldn't really figure out what it was until there's this conversation with a colleague who, you know, happened to say, oh, I like what you're wearing. You know, these conversations in the elevator or whatever, especially between women. You're like, oh yeah, I got that on sale over at blah, blah, blah. You should go get it.
It has pockets. Yeah.
Yeah, it has pockets. And she was like, no. Can't just go get it. Like, what are you talking about? And she's like, guys, I can't just walk into a store and get something. So even to, if you know, we're in the industry for 20 plus years, for someone to say that and you have no knowledge, of that. You think you know everything. You think you've been everywhere, you know, and she shopped the world, you know, designers for concept. They'll shop Tokyo. They'll shop Berlin. She knows how to shop. And for her to say that was really very striking. So it got us thinking, and we asked her to take us shopping. And in New York for plus size, you'll have to hit up like Herald Square. You'll go to Macy's. You can go down Fifth Avenue. And to see this experience through her eyes was very, very opening for us. It's like heart-wrenching when you think of, and even for ourselves at this time, where Yi and I, where we were kind of having our own issues to go into work and have to fight the fight. And for someone to tell us that they couldn't even leave the door, you know, walk out the door in the morning without getting dressed to their own style sensibility. And you have these issues. And then not even to mention the negative impact and the emotional impact on you before you even leave the door. Then you got to go out and fight whatever you need to do with that day. You know, whether you're running the kids around or taking on appointments or going into work. To me, I would just, why? Women shouldn't have to deal with that. You got enough to do. Can't you just get ready in the morning without, you know, getting upset? You know, she was even telling us that she's taking selfies of herself. She was in tears. Then she's late for a meeting. And to me, I just really thought about the social impact, the miss that we were all having by such a majority of women in the United States that were, you know, probably feeling this way and then not being able to go out and feel their best. That means we're missing out on a wonderful resource, a human resource of women getting out and just killing it every day and making their impact in a positive way. So that really made us think, okay, we could do something. And then that's where we kind of got into those conversations I mentioned earlier.
Gotcha. Yeah. What a pivotal like conversation. I'm sure. And I love that idea, even for like other brands who are wanting to better understand their customers, like shop with them, you know, go and see it. Like not, don't just hear it, but like experience it from their perspective. That I bet was like super eye-opening.
Absolutely. And you know, I was at, before Nike, I was at Nordstrom. I was a buyer at Nordstrom, and I always knew there was an Encore department. I knew there was, you know, there are stores out there that existed. But when you speak to someone who is like, yeah, there's stuff, there's a lot of stuff. You can find, we can all find stuff. So women shopping plus size, you can find the stuff. But when you have been forced your whole life, let's say, for example, to wear polo shirts, because that's all your mom could find you. I mean, you get to a point where you want to dress your own style sensibility to reflect who you are, to reflect your values, to reflect your power. And for women, you know, 60% of women in the U.S. that can't do that or we're not able to do that, the options are getting better. That really just hit us as like, okay, if we're going to create something, let's do something worth creating. It's not going to be more stuff. It's going to be the right things that she needs to, you know, feel her best in her wardrobe. And it's not like, I never, ever want to say our clothing gives you confidence. I think women have that. I think they have the power. We all have it. It's really a matter of just embracing it, you know, and feeling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you had all these conversations with different women and, you know, you wrote them all down on sticky notes. What did you do? Like, did you do anything beyond that in order to like collect and organize these insights in a helpful way to be able to continue to draw from all this feedback and, you know, experience that you'd collected?
Oh, yes. So there's the post-its, so they can only last so long on your wall. So for me, that's just one way I like to see things visually. It's definitely all noted down, like in a computer, on a PowerPoint, and you know, whatever I was using, Excel at the time, my notebooks full of all this. And at the same time, when you're invested, I'm also absorbing all of these things. You know, I wouldn't even need those post-its anymore because the conversations just continue to grow. I didn't answer your question previously fully, like to continue the conversation. That's how it started. And then with social media, you know, we also have like a private group on Facebook where I'll share things with our like color palettes or sketches. So, you know, just with the digital age, it's just so much easier to keep the conversation going. We were also doing like in-person focus groups up until 2020. So all of these conversation points are just so fresh and kind of like embedded in the very ethos of C-Rose Go and myself now, because these are the women I talk to. These are our customers. I answer our customer service. I'm so invested in our customers. So from those original post-its, they get transferred into, you know, an Excel chart or something that then we take. So me being the designer and myself as the merchant background, as you're creating the product, all of these things are in your mind space. You know, whether you're creating a woman telling me, like, you know, when I'm sitting at the at my desk. I hate it when my button is pushing in, you know, to my pants, it's pushing into my stomach. Okay, so what can we do about that? Or seams giving out in between thighs because your legs are rubbing together. Okay, how do we do a clean finish? Or like, do we move the seam towards the back so it's not rubbing together? All of these things are in your top of mind as you're going through the prototyping, the fitting, you know, even from the beginning, from the sketching process, I would say.
Yeah, that's great. Because I think sometimes it's hard to like bridge that gap from, okay, you have all the research, you've done the, you know, had the conversations, you have all these notes, but then how does that like translate into then designing the product, you know, selling of the product, merchandising of the product, you know?
It
sounds like you both have like extensive backgrounds in this. So like maybe that was easier for you, but I think that's kind of a point of where sometimes this process can like break down is the translation of those ideas into the physical product.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So then to make that more helpful, then I would say that you can even think of it by category. You know, if women are talking about something with their pants, or, you know, then you can kind of think about the product in that sense of like, okay, if we're getting pants, what did she say about her bottoms? Or as she's wardrobing, you know, I like to ask women too, different people start their outfits different ways. Usually you either start with a shoe or you start with a bottom. So even kind of taking those points and as I was categorizing and taking these insights and putting them into like an Excel, that's where you could also categorize them. So if as you're building product, I'll just pick on pants because that's such a key point for so many people. Mm-hmm. You can do like keyword search pants or bottoms and, you know, refresh on kind of what was being said. But also, and even when I was at Nike, when we would get these insights, you can condense them. You know, you're reading a lot of them over. So as, and you know, that's what we did when we had all these insights and we kind of were able to categorize them. We put them into three pillars, you know, and that's really what C-Rose Go stands on. And we talk about intentional design, we talk about innovation, and we talk about a mindful sense of sustainability. And then under those buckets would be kind of these themes of like quality, our patented fabric, you know, our packaging. So maybe that's a good way to think about it, because it can be overwhelming, is to kind of make sure you're categorizing, and you can keep breaking down these categories and form them into, you know, I think very digestible, maybe nuggets where you kind of are keeping them close to heart as you're creating the product. Hopefully that's helpful.
Yeah. It's like having a big overarching goal and then you've broken it down to like, here are the actionable pieces for like what I can do today, what I can do as it relates to this aspect of the brand, and like breaking it down into more actionable, bits like
each. Yeah, sure. And like each component of the product, you know, is this something that can be solved in fabric? Is this something that can be solved in the stitching? Is this something can be solved in the manufacturing?
Yeah, I love that. So with your fabric, the patent, which is super amazing, and I know very long process and hard to get for a lot of people. What went into the development of that fabric, and how long of a process, like how long of a timeline was it when you started that to when you got the patent?
Yes. Oh my goodness, I feel like so much you purposely block out or forget. It was such a painful process. I do recall early, just even from my time at Nike, I wanted to have a product like this, but there's so much red tape you come across and it's hard to get it done. So as I was speaking with women and they were saying things like, I'm hot a lot, or I'm a sweater. You know, one woman was just like, I sweat, you know, and you know, from my background at Nike, I know that there's product out like a man could go and get a golf shirt that is wicking, it's cooling, and he could wear it to the boardroom. He could wear it if he needed under a blazer. He could seamlessly, you know, be on the golf course or be in a boardroom. Mm-hmm. There wasn't anything like that for women. So kind of keeping that in mind, I knew what we wanted. And then in speaking with Yi, we were kind of going through, okay, what should the construction be? From there, we went and spoke with Mills. Because the fabric is a little counterintuitive, because it has performance fibers, but it's not a dry fit tee. It's not something to go work out in. It's really for your everyday life. If you're, you know, have been in New York in August and you walk out to go get your lunch, it's so humid and hot, you're going to break onto a sweat. Or, you know, if you get into your car after you're in Dallas and it's been baking in the sun and I know 100 degrees. So you know that we need this performance in our day-to-day life. And even for people that are just hot. Even now I'm speaking with women who are like, I'm perimenopausal, I want that shirt. So it's not necessarily really only for, you know, we're finding so many more uses for it, but going to a mill and telling them what you want. Well, first you'd start with looking through their library. I mean, that's kind of what we've done anyway, because we like to use dead stock fabric. So we would head to the very beginning of the process. We knew what we wanted, kind of taking these insights. We started going to these fabric mill libraries that had libraries in New York City in the fashion district. You go into these offices and there's just, you know, thousands of swatches. You sit with a representative, you tell them what they want, and they'll pull. And it just wasn't hitting it. It wasn't what we were looking for. She was telling us, you know, she didn't like pilling. She was telling us that she was hot. She was telling us she wanted a certain amount of coverage because she didn't want any kind of, say it was like a ripple or a dimple showing through. Like, even one woman was like, I want to feel secure. I want to feel secure in my clothing. I don't want bodycon, but I want to feel secure. So we weren't really seeing that. You know, there's a lot of like, if it's a 90 degree or a 90 gram cotton, that's a very, very lightweight cotton. Yep. That's a lot of what's out there for women. Almost like a see-through, like a tissue weight t-shirt.
And it's always been weird to me why like women's shirt weight, especially for like jerseys, is so much thinner than like you go and buy a men's t-shirt. It's much thicker.
And much more substantial, right?
Yeah.
So exactly. So that's what we were finding. And then, so then from there, then we started working directly with the mill. Kind of telling them, this is what we want. This is the construction that we want. And we had to go through a few. Some of them would tell us outright, like, no, you'll never hit that. You'll never get that. Finally, through a really wonderful connection that we have from Nike, connected us with the mill in Vietnam. That's where a lot of technical fabrics come from, some of the best technical fabrics. And they took a gamble on us and they started prototyping with us. And then we started doing some wear testing and some focus group meeting in the city. And just getting really great feedback on, you know, women saying, you know, I was walking down the street and I was waiting for that sweat trickle to come, never came. So that was really encouraging, you know, to get the prototype, do the wear testing, keep getting that consumer input, and then go into production. So we launched then from there, still almost kind of like in a prototyping phase, with a t-shirt, a skirt, a dress, and a long sleeve shirt. And then from there, it was advised, you know, because we started to kind of go into some investor conversations, like, you guys should look in getting this patented. If it was so hard to create and you had to end up making it your own, maybe it's worth filing for a patent.
Yeah, exciting. So what, like, how long did it take from like that initial, when you like started working with that mill in Vietnam to prototype, to when you had like the final fabric that you're like, okay, this is it. We found it. We made it.
Yeah. You know, maybe relatively quickly, I would say about a year, which I think is pretty quick for prototyping something, because we had just really great collaboration and we really knew what we wanted. We knew what we wanted. And once we saw it and felt it, I think it was something that was easy to recognize.
Yeah, that's so helpful. It's like being clear, whatever it is, on, you know, what you're wanting to make, who it's for, what the purpose is. It does make all those decisions so much easier. And you know what, when you're done, because this fulfilled all the reasons why we started this project.
Yeah. And I think just having a really amazing manufacturer that was willing to work with us and knew, probably had a really good idea of what we wanted to hit as well, what we were going for.
So then the patent process, how long did that take? I'm curious.
Oh, the patent process, 5 to 6 years. That was a huge process and pretty involved.
Yeah, I'm sure. Because that's their... another brand I've worked with, that they don't have a material patent, but they have like a process patent for something. And it was like, you know, 7-year process as well. So it's like definitely a long game situation, but it's like, once you land on something that's unique, that's really special that you've created, it's worth protecting it.
I really enjoyed the process. I think we had a wonderful lawyer and a firm working with us, and I would do it again. I thought it was really, really cool, actually, to kind of get involved. And when you know your product so well, it helps to kind of get in between and read between the lines. And then you have to help the lawyer explain. It's like another language to me when you're reading one of these patents.
Yeah. Yeah, that's too funny. It's like you have the fashion jargon and then have to like translate it to like the legal jargon to put it in the document.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, kind of going back a little bit to you and Dee working on this brand, talking to all these women, I'm curious, like, did you ever get any like pushback or feel any hesitancy from your customer about the fact that the two of you do not have firsthand experience of wearing plus size and being that size and experiencing that.
I would say that the very first time that came up was from me and I, because as we were going through this process, I remember before we launched, you know, even before we really committed to our production calendar, she was like, okay, you know, he asked me one afternoon, how are we being authentic to this customer? You know, we don't wear a plus size. Like, here we come. How are we being authentic? I had not even thought of it because I just thought, we're women, you know, and we want to support other women. There are, I mean, how many bajillion menswear, men's designers out there? Some of the best men, you know, are women's designers in the world. Yeah, like, you know, people who loves, take like Michael Kors, you know, Ralph Lauren. You think of all of these huge, huge names that design for women every day that it's never called into question. Like, to me, I was just, you know, me, oh my gosh, like, no, but we're really good at what we do. And we're really great at listening and understanding. And that's what gave me the confidence to be like, you know, we are showing up from a very empathetic place, an empathetic design. And I don't at all mean that in a way of like, I'm sorry. No, it's like empathy in the sense of like, I understand, I'm listening. And we want to be a part of this because the brand has never really just been about, you know, a plus size clothing. It's really about seeing women go, which is what the name means. And it's about like, you know, free up that mind space. We want to see, you know, triumph and recognition and impact is really kind of what I talk about a lot.
Yeah. And thanks for sharing that. Cause I don't ask that to like question your, you know, unique ability to design for plus size. Cause you obviously are doing so well at that and really meeting the need of that customer and, you know, taking the time, showing that like you care and want to listen. And I think that's what's important. It's like, I ask that, I think, because it is, you know, there are so many ways where it can be a challenge to, like, it takes extra empathy and more understanding and more like connection in order to design for someone who is not like yourself. So right. Like, I see a lot of brands who it's like they are their target customer, like they've experienced the challenge firsthand and then design for that. And, you know, just as many brands who are like not at all their target customer and, you know, don't or can't even wear the product that they make. And I think there's kind of like pros and cons and like challenges and, you know, advantages to both.
Yes. And I don't take it the wrong way at all. It has come up, like, first and foremost, that was Yi and I being, how are we being real here? And then us being kind of like, hey, wait a minute. And then even as we would go into shops, you know, we would talk to independent shop owners who usually are plus size women who couldn't find clothing and decided to start their own business. And, you know, after, you know, we've established a relationship and we've become friends, one of them was like, yeah, you guys walked in. It was kind of like, who the heck is this? So it definitely has been, if not verbal, you know, thought of. And hopefully we've addressed. It's something that, you know, try to be present on our social media to kind of state the case and everything you just said to kind of just show up. And we're here because we want to be part of the solution.
Yeah. And you've definitely, I think, shown that you are willing to put in the work to understand. And like, that's what's important. Like, people want to feel like heard and seen and like their experience is validated, whether that's from someone else who also experiences this or, you know, in your case, because you've had all these conversations and really listened and to understand and not just, you know, put forth something that like you think is cool that they should like rather than like what they actually want.
Yeah. You know, I think even like merchandising for plus size is really intense merchandising where you really do. And there's so many elements to understand, but it's really applies to, you know, whether you're designing kids wear or a woman designing menswear, you know, with that, whatever industry or whatever product, you have to understand the user case, the user journey and their mindset. Totally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do think it's interesting how, and I don't know if you and Yi felt any of this, but how some designers are like very like hesitant or intimidated by plus size. You know, they think it's like so much more challenging to do. I think because there's like so many, you know, plus size clothing out there, like you said, that's just stuff that's not actually, you know, things that people want or, you know, things that fit well for people and function well for people. But I don't think it's I see designing for plus size and like fitting for plus size. It's the same as fitting for anybody. You have to know who you're fitting. You have to like spend the time and effort to really understand and see how it functions, how it moves in the real world. But it's more about the understanding and effort that you put into being observant about this. And it's not, I haven't found it to be harder. I'm curious for you and Yi, what approach did you have to like, oh, this is plus size versus, you know, smaller sizes? Was there any like challenge that you saw, like extra challenge of it being that market? Or did you already have experience kind of fitting for plus size in your previous positions?
Yeah, I think that's such a great question. And I would say that, like, you know, with any challenge that I've had to approach as a founder and entrepreneur, you just have to go in recognizing you don't know what you don't know, and being open to, there's a sense of failing forward, of course, in all part of entrepreneurship. But then for fitting, yeah, we had to recognize, you know, we have usually, you know, in our past had fit on a size 6. We knew that you cannot do that. You can't just fit on a 6 and spec up. You know, we were not going to do that at all. So we actually did want to bring in expertise. I think there's no shame in the game and, you know, bringing in where you're looking. And even though we'd been in, you know, hundreds of fit meetings our whole life, when we first started fitting on plus size, we brought in a fit expert for plus size to kind of really teach us what we didn't know. And what we did know was our customers. So we kind of bring in this consumer knowledge, so we know where to have the guidance. But what we didn't know was, okay, are there technical terms? So we brought in a technical designer to do our first fittings with us. And, you know, and she really taught us, okay, if you need to have like, you know, shoulder slope or, you know, more room in the chest, like this is what you can do. And that was, you know, just allowing ourselves the space to understand and grow there. But then also for me, a huge part is movement. Mm-hmm. So we would be in these fit meetings and I would be having a fit meeting, we'll do all sorts of crazy stuff, whether I'd be like, pretend you're reaching for the top shelf and how does that, you know, feel across your back, or you're sitting on the subway, or bend down, stand up, bend down, stand up. So going through that sense of movement. But I think it does help to have support where you know you're lacking in expertise, which I'm very quick to recognize where I'm lacking.
Yeah, and the movement is huge. And I saw that, like, it was one of the things that you designed for, like, on your site. And I was like, yes, another brand's talking about this, because that's something that I always consider as well, is, like, fashion is, you know, obviously you want it to look good when you're just, like, standing there. But it's such a dynamic art. Like, it needs to be able to move well and feel good and look good, like, all these different states. And, you know, even with your brand name, like, she's on the go, you know, like,
yeah,
specifically designing for that. So I love that.
Yeah, not to be too precious about it. And I found, you know, for myself, whenever I was, you know, investing in a piece or spending a little more on something that I wanted to have in my wardrobe for a long time, it would be precious. And if my kids came up to me to hug, or I would be like, we didn't want that. And like, these pieces, like, they look great, they feel premium, but they're very approachable. They're made to move. They're made to be lived in. We didn't want to have this too precious aspect, because we're all living our lives, especially now since our schedules are so hybrid. You know, these pieces are really to move seamlessly with you throughout the day.
Yeah, so cool. So you mentioned kind of like the values or like the pillars that Sea Rose Go is based on. I think you mentioned like intentional design and like thoughtful view of sustainability. And I think there's one other one. Where did those kind of like stem from? And then like, how do you incorporate each of those values into the business decisions that you're making?
Okay. So you catch me if I don't answer part of that, but they come from like, and again, this is kind of going back to my merchandising background. Anytime to answer a question, if we feel stuck or we don't know the answer, I always go back to those original conversations and to our customer. So those pillars come from those original conversations where we had taken all the post-its and kind of started putting them into buckets. And what we could see really clearly, you know, is that they were really exhausted from being ignored by premium designers. There was really a pent-up desire for quality, longer lasting clothing. I would ask women, like, you know, where do you want to shop? And one woman said to me, where do I want to shop? Or like, where do I shop? Or where do I want to shop? Sorry, I messed it up. But I would ask them, where do they shop? Where do they shop? And her response was, where do I want to shop? And that was really eye-opening, because you could see that there's really a lack of options of where they want to be, and they're kind of being forced to shop in certain areas and certain quality and price point. So those conversations all kind of then formulated into these buckets, which we came up with.
Yeah. And so what was the third one? It was intentional design.
Oh, sure.
Sustainability. And the third one that you had mentioned earlier was?
So intentional design. And then the innovation was really something that we brought, that just from hearing women talk about their lives. It's not that anyone came to us and was like, I want a cooling wicking t-shirt. You know, or anyone said, you know, we want you to be innovative. Honestly, what we did here was, you know, that's not something they're interested in. A lot of women would say, that's something for my boyfriend or my husband. I don't really care about that. But Yi and I cared. And we think that, you know, we kind of were thinking that that was something that maybe it wouldn't be the reason a woman came to us, but it could be the reason they come back or they stayed, you know, to kind of have this sense of element of surprise that like, oh, I love this t-shirt and it's cooling and it's anti-pilling and, you know, it's soft and it's washable and all that. So that was kind of something that we heard. But, you know, when you're kind of in tune with being able to kind of read between the lines, that innovation kind of came from that, like what we were kind of understanding what women were saying about their lives.
Yeah, so cool. So have you ever been faced with maybe a difficult decision in regards to following those values in the brand? And if so, can you share what it was and how you handled it?
Yeah, let me think through. I think in the supply chain, absolutely. You are presented shortcuts all the time. You are strapped for cash, you're bootstrapping. You know, it's really easy to say, oh, well, let's do that fabric, or we don't need to do one more fitting. Those are times, I think, where we're like, wait, no, like you have to kind of follow through with those things. Because it can mean all the difference. You know, you could have 100 great reviews and then you get one bad one and it destroys everything you've built. So our customer loyalty and trust is really important to us. Specifically, I can't think of anything where our values, because for us, you know, and it being such, just being the two founders, it's just me and I. So I feel like we constantly are, you know, it could even be, you know, for example, oh my gosh, I'm such a stickler for this stuff, but like copy on the website. Or like a caption, something stupid, like a caption for social media or the pictures that go out, you know, to me, it's like, are we going to get like 100 likes? I mean, it's not going to make or change us, but it all adds up and it's all in the details to me. So even from when you want to just be like, okay, no, this is fine. No, it would never just be fine. It would be something that I'd find myself being like, okay, let's get this right to where we're really happy with it. But that being said, there are definitely those parts where you cannot wait for perfection. I'm not saying wait for perfection because then you'll never do anything, you know, but there's definitely those times where you're like, you're ready to be done, but you probably know at the core that you should do one more edit or one more fit, and you have to do it.
Yeah, for sure. There's always shortcuts you can take, but it helps when you have those values or those kind of guidelines of, if this is what our goal is, what decision can I make right now in order to best follow, you know, meet that goal? And sometimes it is that hard decision of like, okay, we need to, you know, we need to wait longer and really wait for the right fabric or the right fit.
Yeah. I mean, even another really simple example could be like packaging. You know, when we first launched, it was less expensive. We had a poly mailer. It was fine. But then as you kind of, you know, we were reviewing that and going through, I'm like, no, if we're mindful sustainability, we really should have a craft mailer, compostable packaging. So we made that switch. You know, a few years ago, even those little things, it's kind of like this constant conversation of what else can you do to be better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is a constant, like, it's never like, okay, we've arrived, we've made it.
Yeah.
I feel like business. Yeah. It's in business, it's always kind of like, okay, what can I do to do slightly better today? Or just grow a little bit in, you know, these areas. But it's a constant evolution I've found, at least in my business, which keeps it fun, but also a challenge.
Yeah, and it's tough as a solopreneur. You know, you almost need, even as, you know, for Yi and I as co-founders, you get used to just talking to each other. It's more like talking in a room. So it's important to kind of surround yourself too with advisors, you know, with a consumer group that you listen to. Your customers will always kind of be vocal about it. I've been fortunate to have some really amazing mentors and advisors around me. So it does help because you can really just get locked down in the day-to-day with your head in the weeds. I think I'm definitely guilty of that.
Yeah. So on the business side of things, it's you and Yi. And are you both kind of full-time running the brand?
Yeah. So Yi as the designer, so she heads up all creative. And then coming from my experience, I lead the business development, marketing, you know, partnerships. Yeah. And merchandising.
Nice. And do you have kind of any other team members that you're working with then, or is it just you two?
Off and on. We will work with consultants or freelancers when we need help. Being in New York, we have a really wonderful internship program with LIM, which has been amazing. Mm-hmm. Yes, I love it. So we'll have maybe 3 or 4 interns a semester that kind of come in and work on marketing with us. And then, of course, a big part of it is helping them, you know, reach their goals and building their resume. So it kind of, it's definitely Yi and I at our core, but then we'll get help when we need it.
Yeah. And so I'm curious too, like, how are you funding the brand? Because I'm sure like developing a fabric and patent and just like, you know, doing the, as many collections as you have so far, it's not cheap. And so did you mention you have an investor, like, are you VC funded?
This may be a whole other interview.
Okay.
Yeah. So when we started, we were all self-funded. So Yi and I did that. And then once we had this product market fit, we started fundraising, which went through all of 2019. We had our first investor. We were accepted to an accelerator in New York City at the beginning of 2020. And then after the pandemic, the whole investor landscape had just completely shifted away from direct to consumer, especially fashion. From, you know, we went through some more fundraising, but decided to pause that probably towards the end of 2020. And it was fun. It was an experience. Never, ever, ever thought I'd be in front of a room of people. Part of it in 2019, I won a pitch competition with SoCal. And they sent us to the Silicon Valley to pitch right up. And I can't even. I had a 1-month-old at home. Like, it's definitely an experience that, when we first started, I thought we'd do a Kickstarter and that'd be great. But you get to this situation and you just kind of adapt and go with it. But once we kind of got toward the end of 2020, we realized we really just needed to focus on our community and, you know, start talking about a solution over sales. Like, how do we just keep getting tighter and closer with our community and how her needs are changing. So from there, we didn't do any more fundraising, but the business has been consistent to sustain itself. It's adapted where we've been mostly direct to consumer when we launched. Now we're about 50-50. We've turned to wholesale, which has been really great for bringing in, you know, an additional revenue channel.
Yeah. So with the wholesale, like, is it mostly smaller boutiques or larger retailers? I didn't realize you did wholesale as well.
Yeah, so you can find us. We are on Nuuly. Nuuly's a wonderful partner to work with. We also just launched with Nordstrom.com. We're available on Macy's.com and Dia, which is Dia is a platform specific to size 10 to 28. So those are all drop ship. So those are helpful. It's not, I think ideally brands would like to have a PO. I'd love to have a PO. For those, you know, I'll work with Nuuly and like subscription or rental services. And then smaller boutiques. I love connecting with smaller boutiques. It's difficult to find brand adjacencies within plus size. It's not all boutiques carry plus size, but
not every retailer carries them in store.
Exactly. So those are some really wonderful partnerships that we've been able to create.
Yeah, that's so cool. Where primarily are you building your community then? Like, is it social media, or I think you mentioned Facebook group, but like, practically, what does that community you're building look like of your customers?
Yeah, I think the easiest is Instagram, just because of the reach and the ability to connect with more women. So we have our, you know, existing loyal customers who are amazing, and some of them have been with us from the very beginning, and many of those women are in our private Facebook group. So that is a group that's invite only on Facebook. And once you're in, you know, we just kind of share with what's going on within the company, or if there's any pre-launches, definitely sharing, you know, upcoming collections or, and just, to, you know, initial input. And I value what all of these women have to say, but really growing community and having kind of open conversations has been more and more happening on Instagram, whether it's through lives or polls, or even just kind of the comment section. I would say, you know, a little bit of TikTok, but not really. You know, my customer is usually like 30 to 45. So I think everyone's kind of just there's just a larger group of our customer on Instagram and using Instagram on a daily basis. So that's where we've kind of been able to communicate and grow.
Cool. And yeah, that's like, as I was saying, that's where I found you, is on Instagram. Yeah. Nice. So in your time running See Rose Go, has it continued, like, how has it continued to shape your viewpoint on fashion, your viewpoint on merchandising? Like, has being a founder changed how you see the industry?
I have so much respect for founders. It's such a hard business, especially within these last few years. It's been just such a challenge. So much has changed. Consumer behavior is changing all the time. I think it's changed in the way that I look at other brands and how I shop other brands, and definitely how I support other founders. I would say I'm really in tune with shopping habits. I think one of the things that really shocked me was, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, where Shein was named the number one searched brand. And it was just so counter to what I work on and what I hear from customers and people who want to shop value, and they want to shop, brands that reflect their values. So to know that that was the number one searched brand, it's just part of where people are, whether it's economically or just what we're exposed to. You know, is there this sense of sensitized because of, you know, what we're all able to shop, whether it's from Amazon to Temu or Shein. So I'm really, really attuned to kind of what's happening with consumer mindset.
Yeah. So is that like different than when you were like at Nike? I imagine like you were still very focused on the customer and, like you said, the performance, but did kind of the way that you kind of keep a pulse on that and keep a pulse on shopping habits, is it different now with your own brand than it was when you were working bigger corporate?
Yeah, definitely. And I would say that was at a time too where there weren't as many options. You know, now where we are in a place where there's so many direct to consumers that are launching, and there's so many specialty brands, and there's so many startups that we could probably find and support and serve a product that maybe you would have felt 10 years ago that you had to go to a Nike, or now you can kind of find these little, or you might even hear of, or, you know, because Instagram is serving up these ads all the time once they figure out what you're into. So this sense of discovery is much more heightened, which I love. I think that's really great. And I'm totally guilty of that. I'm getting served up sorts of things that I want to try all the time. So it's different in that sense, where maybe in the past we had all felt like, oh, you had to go here to get X, Y, or Z. Now there's so many more options, which I think is why it's so much more expensive to gain customer acquisition and to gain new customers, because there are so many more options. And, you know, our attention span, it just takes a lot more for us to see a brand to be interested in checking it out. But yeah, I definitely think it's much more different from being in a corporate setting to where it's easy to kind of stay in your lane. You know, you're working on a product, or you're working in your silo, or maybe you're working with some cross-functional teams. But once you're a founder, an entrepreneur, you have to put on all the hats, you know, from finance to legal to opening boxes to making product to customer service. So you're much more in tune, I find, with having that finger on the pulse of the industry and with what's going on.
Yeah, makes sense. Like, you're the boots on the ground. And so you have to pay attention to all that versus relying on maybe another team to gather that type of data. So what is the moment or story or situation that you are most proud of in running this business so far?
Okay. Well, I would say hands down, just doing it. Like, here we are. You know, I turned 40 the year after we founded See Rose Go. And I never thought, you know, I had mentioned earlier, I was the 401k person. I had, you know, my husband is a consultant, so I was the one, was the corporate one on the path, and I never
W-2.
Exactly. Like, I'm this is my path, I'm doing this. So when he and I started talking about it, and to his credit, I remember he turned to me and was like, do it. I never wanted to have that sense of regret and look back and be like, I've always wanted to do this, and then the opportunity came and I didn't. So I would say it's a huge accomplishment to do it, to follow through with it, to still be here. And I would think that maybe all entrepreneurs and founders don't take the moment, I know I'm guilty of it, to look back. You know, our our eyes and sights are always set on the next goal and then the future. So it is nice to kind of look back and see like, oh, we did this, we did this, we did this. And, you know, just having the brand force, you know, Ian and I talk all the time that we're so humbled and honored to have the customers that we have, the press accolades that we have, to people loving the product. It still like fills my heart, you know, to have people talk about the product and how much they love it or where they're wearing it, you know, how it's affecting their lives. So that I think is probably more than you want, more than one thing for sure. But I mean, even just doing it and having this is really, really rewarding. I'm super proud of it.
Yeah. And congratulations. That is like a huge accomplishment to one start and then to continue a business. And so it's definitely worth celebrating.
Yeah. I think, you know, anyone who's still here and has adapted through the last 4 years. Yeah, that's probably worth celebrating too.
Yeah, absolutely. So looking to the future, what do you hope to see for the future of Sea Rose Go?
Well, we are, you know, now that we've had the patent, this has become something that we're focused on. We have a new capsule that we just launched for fall holiday with more items in our patented fabric. What we'd really like to do is start working with some other working with on plus size. So I mentioned, you know, women who are going through menopause or perimenopause have said to us, you know, I don't wear plus size, but I love that fabric. So that's a big goal of mine, to start branching out and seeing how we can offer a solution and talk about, you know, these things that a lot of women don't talk about, whether it's sweating or pilling or just body heat in general. Mm-hmm. You know, can we provide a solution? Can we expand the solution and go bigger, you know, whether it's working with other brands or growing your own collection? But I love to take the fabric and work on some collaborations or some, even if it's private label, with some other brands.
Yeah, that's exciting. So cool. So I have one more question that I ask everyone at the end of the interview, which is, if you could communicate one value to the world through the clothes you design, what would it be?
Maybe this is because we were just talking about this, but I mean, we were just talking about empathy, and I think we could all use that. And that's just a sense of understanding where other people are coming from. I really have gained a sense of that, you know, being a person who wears a straight size, but now my social media is all, you know, geared towards all women of all different ages, shapes, and sizes. And people really can just talk on social media and say some things. And something that I have a 12-year-old daughter, and something I talk to her about is, you know, you just don't know someone else's situation or where they're coming from or someone else's story. And I think that's a huge part of a takeaway from Sea Rose Go, is that, you know, everyone has this dignity and power. And I think if we had this kind of empathy of understanding where people are coming from and, you know, cheering for them, that's kind of what Sea Rose Go is, this rally cry of like, look at her go, look at them mm-hmm. achieve. I think that maybe their empathy, but then also this sense of impact is hugely important for Sea Rose Go.
Yeah. Of cheering each other on and like doing the thing. It's
yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think about is, you know, where a lot of brands that make plus size clothing will talk about how clothing makes you look. You know, our clothing gives you confidence. You know, they're really mm-hmm. focused on how clothing makes you look. But we're really focused on what women are doing in our clothing, and we want them to go. And, you know, I think that style is so much more than how it makes you look. It's really, for me, it's kind of like, you know, the impact that you're making in our clothing and the attitude. So that's a huge part of hopefully what makes us different.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can see it too. So in your brand, in your messaging. So, and it's really the, you know, focusing on what the women do and not how they look. I think that is unique. So this has been such a great conversation, Erin. Thank you so much for joining me. Where can people find out more about you and Sea Rose Go online?
Thank you so much, Allison. So fun. And I hope that people listening have enjoyed, found it interesting, or have learned something. They can definitely find me on our social media. I manage all of our Sea Rose Go Instagram, and I have a LinkedIn, EK Kavanaugh on LinkedIn. So those are probably the two best places.
And then where can people shop Sea Rose Go?
SeaRoseGo.com. Absolutely. Yep.
Perfect. I'll put links to those in the show notes. And thank you again for joining me. This has been such a fun conversation.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
That's all for today. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. And if you would like more episodes and resources like this about growing a fashion business that fits your customer lifestyle and values, sent right to your inbox, you can sign up for the How Fitting newsletter at howfittingpatterns.com/newsletter or at the link in the show notes. Again, thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again for the next episode of How Fitting.